Good morning to everybody.
Recording in progress.
Good morning to everybody.
Good morning, Chair.
Good morning.
We've been waiting since 9. Did you have the wrong time?
Was it not 9:30?
We've been all on the platform since 9 o'clock. Regrettably, I need to leave to go to the Finance Committee. But I'll have to participate at a later stage and need to reserve my right, obviously, in that regard. But it is a pity. Thank you, Chair.
No, my apologies. I thought it was 9:30 because I was in the intelligence meeting. No, my apologies to everybody.
We all had that confusion. You're not the only one, because we also joined late because we thought it's half past 9.
Not to worry, Chair. You're always on time. Can't say the same about Mr. Janky, but you're always on time.
No, my apologies. Honestly, I just thought it was 9:30. Because all our meetings start at 9:30, my apologies. Honorable Swart, I think your request is accepted. Can we start? Let me also welcome the Deputy Minister, Honorable John Jeffrey. I see he has also joined everybody on the virtual platform and those who are streaming from home. Mr. Dupree, are you ready to take us through the documents that we requested you to research before we move to the actual bill?
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee and my Deputy Minister. Mr. Chair, yes, we can share the research document that we submitted to you. Just allow me a second, please. Mr. Chair, at the previous meeting of the committee, you requested the department to do some research on the effectiveness of hate speech and hate crimes legislation. We have prepared a note for the committee. We would like to indicate to the committee that the document or research note is split into two parts. Part A provides a high-level snapshot summary of a limited selection of foreign jurisdictions in their hate crimes or hate speech legislation. The purpose of paragraph A is then, or part A is to illustrate the disparity between this type of legislation across countries and regions. So there is no uniform definition of the offense of hate crime or hate speech, and no uniform category of victim or victim identification, and no uniform penalties for the offences concerned. This is important to note, especially where the definition of the offences are concerned, and then also the victim identification and the penalties, and that makes it a bit difficult to precisely determine the effectiveness of the legislation concerned. Part B of the note contains extracts from academic text which assesses the offences of hate crimes or hate speech in foreign legislation and the efficacy thereof. The texts speak to the disparities identified in the discussion on Part A set out above and address the difficulty in answering the efficacy of such legislation. Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'm going to highlight the summary for you of the findings. And then I don't know whether you would like me to take you through the part A and part B of the document. The information is there. I may indicate that Dr. Swepp in Ireland assisted us a lot with information regarding research that were conducted, and we want to express our gratitude towards her in her willingness to assist. The the request by the chairperson at the previous meeting proved to be a difficult question to answer, Mr. Chair, for a number of reasons, not least of which how to properly interpret and understand the question itself. The effectiveness of hate crimes legislation is dependent on what we define as effective, and this requires a much broader understanding and perspective of the entire criminal justice system in South Africa and what is understood by effectiveness of legislation which criminalizes conduct or which creates criminal offenses. The issue of interpretation and understanding of effectiveness aside, the next leg of the question requires an interpretation of data relating to hate crimes in jurisdictions where it is criminalized. When studying this area of the law, it became apparent that this area of the law in itself is difficult and complex. This is in most part due to the fact that each jurisdiction defines a hate crime differently. There is no universal definition of a hate crime, and these definitions can in fact vary within a region. It should also be taken into consideration, Mr. Chair, that not only the definitions of hate crime vary across the different countries, but so do the victim categories and methods of selecting those categories. Some of the jurisdictions criminalize this conduct through different means and not necessarily through legislation. And the example there is, for example, the Netherlands. Taken together, this means that understanding the data emanating from each of these jurisdictions, if there is any data available at all, will require understanding the policy approach to conduct which we seek to criminalize in this bill, understanding the legislation in the foreign jurisdiction, and then finally understanding and interpreting data if such data is available. We would also like to maybe just highlight to the committee that there's no baseline or control against which we can measure the effectiveness of legislation criminalizing hate crimes and hate speech. So varied are policy approaches and data of each country that this research would be required to transcend into the realm of expert academia in order to answer it properly. For that reason, we have provided in part B of the document various research results that were made available in articles, etc. I don't know, Mr. Chair. I think what we can say is, and based on those three factors, it's difficult to determine the effectiveness of legislation that were enacted in other countries, precisely because of the fact that there's no universal definition of what a hate crime or hate speech is. Secondly, that the different countries identify different categories of victims. And then also, of course, that there is also a varied difference or a large difference in the penalties that are prescribed for those offenses. What it is interesting is, and it is in the note, you will see it under Kenya, that their penalty for the crime concerned is 3 years imprisonment. So the proposed bill, as far as penalties are concerned, especially with regard to hate speech, I think it's a fairly accurate penalty being prescribed in comparing it with other countries. Mr. Chair, I don't know whether you would like me to highlight anything else in this note. We have tried to keep it as short as possible. However, it is 16 pages long, and it might take us quite a while to work through the 16 pages in the committee itself. Mr. Chair, may I stand off the research note and possibly then share the bill with you?
Now, before you move to the bill, I think this document was set. Members have a sight of it. If I may just ask from members, do you have any questions or comments before we move to the bill?
Chairperson, I can't find where I can put my hand.
Okay, Honorable Horn, followed by Honorable Taylor.
Swatcha Chair, I'm struggling with the hand as well, the side.
Okay, Honorable Swart will follow.
Yes, Chair, and I must immediately admit that due to some other responsibilities, my preparations have not been up to standard. Can I just ask Mr. De Pree, in terms of the two different tropes of criminalizing hate crimes specifically, the one being where somebody is then found guilty of a hate crime, so that the act itself is the criminal offense, and the other one where the fact that it was a hate crime is sort of added to, let's say, the assault, which is the common law offense or the statutory offense if you have penal code in a country, whether his research has given any indication as to which of those two different options work best in practice and is the most effective, and whether there's any, I want to say, possible unintended consequences of going one route rather than the other when a country decides whether you want to make the hate crime in itself an offense or whether it is something that is added to the original offense that was committed on the basis of hate. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chele.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Chair, the only comment I have on this before we go to the bill itself, I just want to really thank the team for the work that they have done and also giving us this information under the circumstances that they find themselves. I want to, my comment, Chair, is that one appreciates the information that is given, particularly on the matter that this is a difficult subject that even in other countries, there's nothing more or much that we can learn from. Therefore, Chair, for me, it gives us an opportunity to be able to look into our own situation in our country and also give us an opportunity to do justice in this bill, in a sense that when we are done with this bill, Chair, I know that, you know, from the comments, many comments, it's not going to be happy or satisfy everybody, but there will be something that our country will look up to in dealing with some ills in the society, in our society. In short, Chair, I wanted to say thank you very much for the team for going through such a difficulty in looking for information for us outside. So now we can go through this bill with a more open-minded, I don't know, better way to say open-minded, Chair. It is the only way that I can see. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Swart.
No, thank you, Chair, and thank you for the research paper. Now, clearly, a lot of the focus in the research paper is on hate crime, and there's in my view, much to learn from this research paper, much to learn from foreign jurisdictions. And we appreciate the focus on hate crime, which is, we appreciate and definitely support that aspect of the bill. Now, the more contentious part is obviously relating to the hate speech issue, which is not dealt with in great detail. But I am interested in a comment on page 10 that says, from a legal perspective, the criminalization of hate speech is not unproblematic, a double negative. In other words, it is problematic, being seen in direct conflict with rights to freedom of expression. And there are different views set out here. So it is helpful for us to consider that as we go forward. I appreciate the document, but clearly the whole issue around the hate speech part is where a lot of our focus is going to be attached, given the balancing act we have to strike between what is some perceived as a need for hate speech when balanced with rights of freedom of expression, rights of religion, et cetera, et cetera. So thank you, Chair. With those few words, I need to excuse myself to go and attend to the medium-term budget, but I will be participating in due course. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Before I move to Honorable Nibot Dohan, I think members, we have to agree about what time do we conclude this meeting, because other members need to drive to Parliament. So I think we need to allow them time. Can I suggest that the latest it must be 12 o'clock? Will that be in order?
That's fine, thank you.
Yes, it's fine, Chair. At least we've got 30 minutes to go to the bus stop. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Nibot Dohan.
Good morning, Chair, and thank you. And good morning to everybody on the platform. I would like to thank the team for the work that they've done in producing this research paper. I am rather surprised that there are only two African countries that are cited, Kenya and Sudan. So I would like to ask, is it only two countries in Africa who have hate crime, hate speech legislation? Or are there any other African countries who also have that legislation? There are a lot of issues now relating to, you know, hate crime or hate speech in Africa. And it's, I just find it very curious that we only two countries would have legislation. So if you could respond to that, please. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm not sure whether Deputy Minister, you would want to come in before Mr. Dupree, or you will allow Mr. Dupree.
No, I think let Mr. Dupree respond. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, I see that Ms. Alison Botha, my colleague, had her hand up. I don't know. She lost her voice. So I don't know whether she would be able to speak, but possibly just to get an indication whether she would like to maybe say something before we wrap up the questions. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, no, thank you very much. Sorry, Ms. Botha. Ms. Botha, over to you.
Good morning, thank you. I just want to check if you're able to hear me and if I'm clear.
Yes, you are clear.
Okay. One of the questions that was asked was and I'm not sure to sort of take it from the top, but one of the members is why we chose only two African countries.
Can you put this back now?
Satellite.
Can you put this back now?
And then we tend to... I am connected to my Wi-Fi and I'm Is it any better now?
It's better now.
Okay. One of the questions I was asked is why we chose only two African countries, and it's explained sort of quite briefly in our introduction and summary of countries that we have is because one for reasons of time and intensity and complexity of research, and two, that it would have been nigh on impossible for us to do quite thorough research into all African countries on the hate speech or crimes legislation. And so it is for those two reasons. Yes?
Yes, we are struggling to hear you, but I think if I understood you, one, it was issue because of the time, time limits that you have to focus on these two countries. Am I correct?
Yes.
Yes, because we are really struggling to hear you.
I'm sorry,
was that the only question?
I'm sorry, I have, no, there is another question that I also wanted to address. I'm sorry, Chair, I have flu and I'm struggling, to predict and be clear.
So, Ms. Botha, can Mr. Dupree answer all the questions because we're struggling to hear you?
Thank you, Chair.
Chair. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With regard to the question, which options of creating a hate crime would work the best, I must admit, we did not focus precisely on that. And I think when one look at the country and which option they use, I think a number of factors will have to be taken into consideration, among others, the historical reasons for creating or choosing an option with regard to hate crime. The important message that we received when we spoke to Dr. Schwepp is that it is important for a country to create the hate crime and hate speech offences, because that sends out a strong and clear message from the state concerned that these type of offences will not be tolerated and must be penalized. So that could be the short answer. And then I think, I think the message came through, although we apologize for the bad connection on behalf of Ms. Botha, but I think the message came through with regard to the question, why only Kenya and Sudan? There's not much that I can add to that response. Those were the questions, Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Swart just merely made a statement that the portfolio committee should then focus on hate speech to the extent that in comparison to or as opposed to whether it restricts freedom of expression. Thank you, Chair.
There was a question asked by Honorable Horn.
Chair, yes, that was the first part of my answer. If you look at different countries, and in order to determine which option they used, one would have to look at why they use that option, and a portion of that would be to look at the historical context within which those offences were created or the options chosen for those offences. We did not really focus much on that. The research note started from the premise of, or the question that we need to inform the committee on the effectiveness of this type of legislation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, members. Can we move now to the bill?
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much. Mr. Dupree, you are still loading the bill. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair, you will recall at the previous meeting, the Portfolio Committee had a general discussion in order to assist the department in preparing this working document. The proposed amendments and deletions are highlighted in grey. I don't think it is necessary for the committee now to go through the long title because the committee always go through the long title at the conclusion of its deliberations on the clauses of the bill because they might have been an effect on the long title. There are no proposed amendments to the preamble. Then when we get to clause one, Mr. Chair, we have the definition of communication. Then the definition of court, which will be the High Court or then a regional court. Necessary definition of the Criminal Procedure Act, data and data message, and then the Director of Public Prosecutions.
Mr. Dupree?
As recommended by Kusatu, if I remember correctly. And then...
Mr. Dupree, you lost us on the Director of Public Prosecution.
Sorry, Chair, I saw that I had an unstable connection. I think it is due to the fact that we're going into load shedding now. So when my backup system kicks in, there might be a couple of seconds, but it usually kicks in quickly. So I apologize for that in advance, Chair. So yes, the definition of Director of Public Prosecutions is there. And then the definitions of electronic communication and electronic communications system. With regard to the definition of harm, the proposed amendments there are to include reference to cultural. If I remember correctly, it was a proposal by Kusatu. And then also as a result of recommendations, observations that were made by interested parties, the words following the word harm in the second line of that definition is proposed to be included to the extent that the harm objectively undermines the human dignity of the targeted individual or groups. And that was also in view of guidance that were given by the Constitutional Court in the Kulani case. We have the definitions of hate crime and hate speech. Then with regard to characteristics, you will recall, Mr. Chair, that the bill clauses 3 and 4, the bill has introduced, these lists were included or are included in clauses 3 and 4. So this is merely a proposal from the department side. I think it's obvious that it's up to the committee to decide whether it will streamline those clauses or whether it might be more appropriate to include the two definitions in the definitions clause. You will note that we have highlighted some issues in blue. So those are proposals that reference to other grounds or characteristics should also be included. But I think the important question here, Mr. Chair, is, and it's up to the committee to decide whether this list is an appropriate list and whether it will serve the purpose that it is meant for. And then with regard to grounds, that term is used in Clause 4, and that is the hate speech provision. This definition clarifies that reference to occupation or trade and political conviction should not be included under the ambit of Clause 4 then. The proposal was also made by interested parties that the definition of intersex should be deleted and that it should carry its ordinary dictionary meaning. And the department agrees with that and proposes that the committee considers deleting that definition from the bill. I may indicate to the chairperson that it was in the early 2000s that the definition of intersex was included in PAPUDA, and that is quite a while ago now. So it might be better to leave this definition or reference to intersex than to bear its ordinary dictionary meaning.
Chair, I don't know if I can quickly come in on this point.
You may, Honourable Deputy Minister.
Look, it's the whole issue of LGBTI and the I being intersex. What we've done in the bill, and you can see what Mr. Dupriya has got on the screen, is that gender is standing on its own. Okay, that's just above the screen. It was gender in the introduced. No, in the introduced bill, it was gender and gender identity. Gender identity has been taken out from that point. And what has been put in under Q is, I mean, the one issue is the terms lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex. But the other terminology is issues relating to sexual orientation, which would cover lesbian, gay, bisexual, issues relating to gender identity and gender expression, which would cover transgender people, and then the sex characteristics are matters referring to people that are intersex. So apart from just taking out intersex, which doesn't seem to be used too much anymore. I mean, in PAPUDA, it was sort of new ground. And effectively, this Q clause of sexual orientation, gender identity or expression or sex characteristics replaces all of that and covers the LGBTIQ plus issues. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister. You can proceed, Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The remaining definitions are quite straightforward. The term victim is then defined to mean a person, including a juristic person or a group of persons against whom an offence referred to in Section 3 or 4 has been committed. And that is important, for example, for the clause dealing with the victim impact statements.
And Mr. Dupree, I think let's pause here. Members, any comments on the definitions?
Yeah.
No comment. Let's proceed.
Thank you. Apologies. My apologies, Chair. I was slow there.
My apologies, Chair. Me too.
Okay. Honourable Horn, followed by Honourable Maseko Jele, in that order.
Chair, I was going to say we expect sometimes Mr. Horn to be slow, but I'm a bit disappointed in Honourable Maseko Jele being slow.
Yeah. you see, the difficulty is, Chair, I think the Deputy Minister had already breathed a sigh of relief. And then he felt it important to just express his frustration. But here I am.
Proceed, Honourable Horn.
Thank you for your protection, Chair. Chair, in terms of the characteristics, and up to now, I firstly want to say we've heard the Deputy Minister specifically, I want to say, advocating and justifying for this long list of characteristics on the basis that the courts, and specifically also Wilani, according to his analysis of that judgment, has expressed approval of the expansion of the list contained firstly in the Constitution and then by way of PAPUDA. And I don't want to at this stage have us bogged down as to whether that is exactly what the courts did. My reading of it, to cut a long story short, is that the court has actually in Kulani said, well, this whole matter as to whether the expanded list is constitutional, it's not really at the heart of the issue we adjudicating in Kulani. The court actually also made the side comment that some of the friends of the court actually made some useful suggestions in that regard, but given the fact that it was not really at the heart of the issue, the court didn't find it necessary to deal with it. So, and then if we further consider that in Kulani, of course, criminalization of hate speech was not the issue, then my view is that we will have to, as Parliament, be convinced that each of these characteristics is really justified and specifically justified in the light of the fact that we're now going a step further and we are criminalizing hate speech in certain circumstances. So that's the one aspect. The second aspect is if one looks at this from a holistic perspective in terms of the Bill of Rights in its totality, it's quite clear that from a rights perspective, this is then a limitation on free speech. So we must also, in my view, then carefully consider whether the objective of limiting and trying to prevent hate speech can only be achieved by way of criminalization, because that's ultimately what the limitation clause demands of us. So ultimately on those two grounds, Chair, I must say that I have a question as to how did we come about to settle on this long list. I don't want to call it a laundry list or a whatever, but I would think that the department must, in respect of each of these sub-clauses or characteristics, come in and inform the committee what is behind the need to include it in this list. So, for example, if you look at the history of criminalization of hate speech and hate crimes, I would want to argue that all of that was informed by some serious resurgence of really hateful activities. So if you go back to the United States of America, there was a resurgence of the Ku Klux Klan. And ultimately, they decided now is the time to now, in terms of our legislative framework, deal more harshly and more effectively with this, because the Ku Klux Klan is not to be accommodated in any way or form in our society. The same with neo-Nazism, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't want to even go to the debate about race and so on, because ultimately I don't think that's the issue here. But if we look at this list, birth, language, I would want to ask, and I don't want to be obstructionist, that we, in respect of each of these characteristics, be at least informed as to what is the hateful activities and speech that ultimately informed the decision on the part of the department to include it in this list. Because to my mind, and I'm now concluding, Chair, this is the only way in which we as lawmakers can then ultimately exercise our obligation to ensure that we do not limit rights unnecessarily in terms of the limitation clause. So I don't think from our side it is as simple as merely accepting that the list of prohibited grounds can be expanded upon without a proper substantiation of each of these clauses, based on recent experiences within the broader South African society. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Horn. Honorable Masako Taylor.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, I think my point starts with the definition. My in fact, it's a question. The more we read this and the more we talk about this chairperson, it really gives one a reason to say it is true that we must have this law. Also, Chair, the history, the background of the history of our country acquires us to be where we are, chairperson. The first question before I go to the long list, because I just want to find out from Mr. Dupree on the definition on the electronic communication. The definition says here it means communication by means of data messages. I wanted to find out if that data messages, does it include also pictures? Pictures, because the pictures can communicate, chairperson, can give us communication. And also on the issue of harm, chairperson, I agree with the issue of putting culture there. It should stay the social, culture, and or economic harm. That one I also agree with it. But going to the list, Chair, I agree with all these, because to me these characteristics are a reflection of our country, our communities. There is a background which made the department to go this route, which for now we can't go into details with each and every aspect on this list, but there is a reason why we have to go through this route, chairperson, of this long list. It's unfortunate because we differ, we don't see the same. But Chair, I think on the where I feel that the department, I want to add, Chair, it is on the issue of color. I think that we must specify what do we mean by that. I was going to suggest that we put skin color, Chair. I'm not sure if maybe I will be understood properly on this one, because the issue of the skin color, Chair, it has been a problem in our country. It is a problem. In actual fact, the reason why we must have this bill, Chairperson, the background of our country is different from any other country. Because in South Africa, the history tells us that there are laws which were enacted during apartheid. The laws which came because of hate towards a certain grouping or a race, Chairperson. We should not shy away from that one. This is the time where we have to look into this with an open mind and assist each other, because these things, they keep on coming in the community one by one, and we keep on saying, no, we hide it. No, we just have to be straightforward, Chair, and say, this is the issue that we are facing as the country, and we have been trying to agree and in fact to allow people to be sensible enough to think in terms of assisting us to have this rainbow nation. I think on the list, Chair, without going too long in trying to explain myself, can we put the issue of skin color? Thank you, Chairperson. I'll pause there.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jailer, Honorable Yako.
Inkosi kakhulu, Chairperson. I think I'm very encouraged to see that the committee is sort of veering towards the same mind, judging from the previous speakers, because I did want us to caution on the issue of criminalizing some of the things that are in the list. For instance, anti-racists may then be persecuted because it may seem like they're propagating for racism, whereas they're being anti-racist, as well as Honorable Maseko Jela just said now, that Africa does have a different history behind it. So when Black people specifically want then for the abolishment of apartheid statutes, it might be seeming as if they are contravening or against this hate crimes bill, and therefore it won't yield to what we're trying to correct as a country. So I think we need to be very specific with some of the list in the list that will pertain to South Africa specifically to protect our people. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jacob. Honorable Kretenbach.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning to everybody. Firstly, I agree with the points made by Honorable Horn. And then secondly, I have a question about the definition of harm. In the bill, harm is, the definition is quite a bit wider than the definition set out in Tselane. So if Mr. Zapier could just address that issue, why it's necessary for the definition of harm to go so much wider than is set out in the Constitutional Court decision. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Members, before Honorable Dupree, I don't see disagreements. But what I think is important, I mean, in any legislation, the definitions are very important. And I think also on my side, there's having a responsibility to communicate with the public and the media. I do think that the request to go to each of these categories is very important, so that we understand why this word, why this one is here. Honorable Jelly talks about skin color and color. I do think that before we conclude this bill, Mr. Dupree, it would be important to have the particular stakeholders to have an in-depth discussions on that. And if you're talking about aid, how does it apply here, so that we have any one of us can be in a position to explain this bill to different constituencies who might have different interests. So it will be important for us to have a deeper understanding of each characteristics. So I don't think that when Honorable Horn was raising this, I mean, he might be building up towards, but as for now, I take it that he is not being against any of them, but he wants a rationale for each and every one of those characteristics. Honorable John Jeffrey, Deputy Minister.
Yeah, thanks. Maybe if I can just deal with the issue of characteristics. Remember, characteristics is the categories of prejudice that make something an existing crime a hate crime if it's committed because of that prejudice. And I think what's important, and then just the grounds are then what applies to hate speech, which would be the characteristics excluding occupation or trade and political affiliation or conviction. But then if one just goes to the characteristics, each of these aspects should be then something where there is prejudice in our society and harm caused to people of that group. So starting with age, I actually don't know if there's sometimes prejudice against older people or younger people, but I'm not aware of any crimes being committed against people because they are of their age. So I do think that's something to highlight. I don't think with respect, Chair, so much for the department, but for the committee to be considering. Sure. Albinism, I think, is obvious in that people are killed and assaulted, but killed only because they're albinos. And so that's an important one. Birth would be, yes, there's crimes committed against people because of where they're born, but maybe that's a more borderline one. The issue of color, I think Honorable Maseko Jele's point is valid. What is meant is skin color. And it is a ground of discrimination and harm against people who are maybe in a particular culture lighter skinned than other people or darker skinned and so on. A culture, people can be attacked because of their culture. Disability the question to ask is, are there attacks on people specifically because they're disabled? I suppose it's what the definition of disability is. Maybe a child or a person with Down syndrome, I'm not sure if that's classified as a disability, but possibly they could become vulnerable. Ethnic or social origin is obvious. Gender is I think obvious. HIV and AIDS status, I mean, people have been killed for being HIV positive. Language, again, I think there are cases in South Africa where people are attacked because of the language they speak. Marital status was one that was put in by the submissions. Personally, I don't think whilst there is discrimination against single people or married people, I don't think it leads to other crimes. I don't think people are attacked on the basis of being single or married. So I have doubts about that. Then it's nationality, migrant, refugee status, and a proposal of asylum seekers. And I think that's pretty obvious in South Africa where that is happening. Mm-hmm. Occupation or trade. Would be somebody can be attacked for being a hawker, for being a bus driver, taxi driver, for being a sex worker. And political affiliation or conviction, again, people can be killed for that. Pregnancy is one that also I'm more doubtful of, that people are attacked because they're pregnant. Race or religion, I think, is obvious. Sex is very much an issue, and then the sexual orientation aspect is gender identity is also there. Sorry, I think I left out. Did I leave out conscience? But people can be. It would depend on whether people in South Africa are attacked because of their conscience specifically, rather than them as individuals. So that's basically the list. Obviously, the So and the hate crime aspect is not restrictive on freedom of speech. What is restricting freedom of speech is the hate speech aspect, and therefore one would need to go through the whole list again. We took out, as I think I explained, occupational trade, because we didn't want unforeseen consequences where people criticize and say harmful things about politicians and they then get accused of hate speech. And similarly with political affiliation or conviction. On Honorable Yako's point, which is not the intention of the bill, I mean, if somebody goes and bashes, which they've done, Rhodes' statue in Cape Town, well, it's malicious injury to property, but as far as making it a hate crime, we would need to make sure that is not covered, because that's not the intention of the bill. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. I'm not sure whether these are old hands or new hands, Honorable Yako and Honorable Beckenbach.
Sorry, old hands.
Old hand, Honorable Yako.
It is an old hand, Chair. However, just wanted to highlight, for me, I hear what the Deputy Minister is saying. However, maybe I'm not sure if he's not broadened his explanations of what each line actually means in terms of being criminalized, in fact, in terms of being used against you, in a way that then in a way that will protect everybody. That's what I mean. So I'm not quite covered there.
Thank you, Honorable Yako, Honorable Jala.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think on the, of course, I'm covered with these others, but on the issue of age, just to also add on what the minister was saying, but also highlight that people, Chairperson, are being killed for being old. That because you are old, you are a witch in this community, mm-hmm. and they kill you. So I think this also cover those people and other many other issues that maybe at the moment one cannot talk about for because of time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jale. Honorable Horn.
Yes, Chair. It's quite difficult in the sense that the Deputy Minister now says, and he is now given some commentary on this list of characteristics, and then he says, this is what the committee will have to consider. Now, the difficulty with that is, of course, this is a bill brought to the committee by the executive. And one would think then that in respect of each of these lists of characteristics, the executive and therefore the department has done the due diligence exercise to establish whether they have clarity in their own mind that these acts in line with this list of each one of these characteristics is frequent enough and present. I don't want to fight with the Deputy Minister, but for him to now, after he and the government has introduced this bill, to come and say, well, I don't know whether people are being killed for this. And then he uses words like prejudice and discrimination. And I think the one thing we must be very clear of is that this bill will not pass constitutional muster if we start criminalizing mere prejudice and mere discrimination. To criminalize hateful acts, whether it's in speech or even otherwise, will need some more. So I'm at a loss here as to how we then go about if it is the executive's point of view that now it's the job of the committee to make sure that all of these would satisfy that requirement that it is included in a rational basis. So it's very difficult. Otherwise, then it would mean, if I understand the Deputy Minister correctly, that we must now park this issue and commission some sort of an investigation and an inquiry as to whether there is to be found actions that ultimately warrants the inclusion of each of these lists. And with the greatest of respect, I don't think that's the way it should work. Once the executive introduces a bill, it should be able to justify the bill in its totality along with all of the different sub-elements. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Horn, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Chair, if I can respond to that and assist Mr. Horn. Firstly, a bill that is introduced by the executive is not cast in stone. And I don't know if that's what you are implying that it should be. So I'd made comments on the list. The only aspect I made a comment on was on age. We've then had a response from Honorable Maseko Jele about why she thinks that should be on there. The comments that I raised issues with were categories that have been added in the public hearings. They're not from the executive. We've put them on so you can see them, and that is specifically marital status and pregnancy. So I'm a bit worried, Honorable Horn, that you are distorting, I hope not deliberately, what I'm saying. The issue is this list of characteristics. A crime is committed. I mean, the way that the hate crime section works is a crime is committed. You've got to prove that crime. Somebody is assaulted. If you can prove that it is the motive for that is because of one of these characteristics, that the victim got attacked because one of the characteristics that's listed here, then it can become a hate crime. So that's the issue. So obviously, what I was saying when it comes to, for example, marital status is obviously there's prejudice, there's discrimination sometimes against married or single people. There's discrimination against pregnant people, but that doesn't necessarily lead to attacks on them. So I just wanted to clarify that, but it is ultimately the committee's job to consider. And I think it's not an issue that requires, although obviously those people who want to delay the bill would probably be proposing this. I don't think it's an issue that requires extensive research. We should know what are the fault lines where, in terms of the characteristics, people in South Africa get attacked and physically harmed or abused because of those characteristics. And then as far as hate speech, it would be similarly, what are the fault lines that people need to be protected from because of people saying things because of the group, the ground, the group that the person belongs to. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I see no further hands. Mr. Dupré?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think there's only one question left that I need to respond to now, and that's the question, why is the definition of harm wider than the direction given in the Kulani judgment? And this is now maybe just going back on the history of the bill itself. You will recall that the bill was introduced into Parliament before the Kulani judgment came out. And that is why the bill was kept in abeyance to wait for that Kulani judgment. Now, it's important, Mr. Chair, to read the definition of harm together with Clause 4. And we'll get to Clause 4, but if I may go there quickly, just to indicate to the committee that if you read the definition of harm. If you read the definition or the offense of hate speech, then in 4.1a, Roman 1 and Roman 2, the or was replaced with an and. And that makes it very important, because where we've got reference to the word harm, it should be kept into consideration that if you read the whole definition of this offense, then it becomes necessary that apart from inciting harm, the intention should also be there to promote or propagate hatred, and that would then lead to the offense of hate speech. The amendment to, or the proposed amendment to harm, was actually submitted by interested parties that indicated that the definition as it stood or stands in the introduced version of the bill is too wide, and that it should be restricted with regard or with reference to the concluding words proposed to be inserted in the definition. I hope I've responded to the question, Chair.
Thank you very much. Members, can we have a 3-minute comfort break? I'm struggling to, I think I took a lot of water. Can we have a 3-minute comfort break?
Yes, Chair.
Sure, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we proceed? I have Honorable Lebort Borchan.
Thank you very much, Chair. I was waiting for the response to Honorable Jayla's question about the data message, because I wanted to ask if the data message includes pictures or photos. And so there's data and data message. Does it also include voice messages? That would be my question. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thank you for alerting us about that question by Honorable Jale and your additions. Mr. Dupree or Deputy Minister, if you would want to respond.
Chair, if Mr. Dupree, I can respond.
Okay. Mr. Dupree?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, these are technical definitions, but I would venture to say, and I promise that I will go back and I'll look and make sure. But the importance is that
Chair, is it on my side or is it
missing? Mr. Priya, you've disappeared or you've muted yourself or something.
Respond to the committee's question at its next.
Mr. Dupree, we are struggling to hear you.
Yes, I apologize, Mr. Chair. I said that I promised to respond to this question in more detail. Okay. It might be that we might need to maybe tweak the definition itself, but I think here the important definition is the definition of the data message. And that means a data generated, sent, received, or stored by electronic means. So that would, to my mind, but I'm going to make sure about that. But at this stage, to my mind, it will include pictures, Chair, because pictures is a form of communication. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. With respect to characteristics, I think at this stage we would welcome if members would have other options that those be sent to Mr. Dupree, so that maybe with respect to the characteristics we would look at other options that members would have. We do accept the Deputy Minister's explanation, but I think we will come back to this these characteristics once we also know the other options that other members would be suggesting. Will that be okay, members?
Yes, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There are no proposed amendments with regard to the objects clause. I don't know whether you would like to pause here or may I proceed to clause 3 then?
I think members, they do know what to do when they have, they just raise their hands when they have something on any of the matters. So I see no hands, let's proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with regard to the offence of hate crime clause 3.1, and subclause 1 is actually then a definition of what constitutes a hate crime. Now, here we would like to point out that with regard to the exclusion of the offence referred to in section 4.1, that was a proposal by interested parties because they were concerned about the possibility of double criminality to the extent that per definition, if you are convicted of hate speech, you can also be convicted of hate crime. So those words are there to ensure that the risk of double criminality is not present when a person is convicted of hate speech. The reference to the underlying offense, if we read subclause 1, we will see that a hate crime is an offense recognized under any law. So that is the underlying offense. And that is why, and you will see now when we go to subclause 2, why it's important to maybe make a reference to the underlying offense. But I'll explain that to the committee in subclause 2. The rest of the proposed amendments are merely of a technical nature. I don't think I need to once again point that out to the committee. We have done that in the previous working document. Now, Mr. Chair, if the committee accepts the proposal or decides that the characteristics should rather be defined in clause 1, then it will not be necessary to have this list, and it can then therefore be deleted from clause 3.1. We have an option maybe for the reformatting of subclause 1. There was commentators that indicated that the subclause is too legalistic, and this is an attempt by the department to maybe present this option to the committee to decide whether the proposed option does not read better or easier than the existing or the introduced sub 1. Now, Mr. Chair, if we look at subclause 2.
Now, before you proceed, members, there are two options here on hate crime. What are your preliminary views? Honorable Jelle.
So I think maybe one missed the issue of legalistic. If we can be explained exactly what does that mean, that led Mr. Dupree to come to these options because of a commentator who said the first one is too legalistic. Can you explain, can you give us more information around that? Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Maybe let me take Honorable Deputy Minister first, then Mr. Dupree.
Okay, thanks. So Mr. Dupree can come in, but basically just to say, and I can't remember what was specifically said, but the option for 3.1 is largely saying, or not largely, is saying the same as the one that was in the introduced bill. But it was put out to try and make it more easier to follow, which is basically two parts to a hate crime, the underlying offense, arson, and then the hate aspect part of it under B. But the intention was to try and get something that reads better. Let me also just remind honorable members that the person who originally worked on the hate crimes and hate speech bill was Ms. Teresa Ross, who sadly passed away during COVID. So I think so Mr. Dupree is sort of newer to the issue, coming with newer ideas. So just to emphasize that as well. But the intention of the option is to try and get it to read better. So the question to the committee chair, which you've asked, but is does it read better? Are they succeeding in that? Thanks, Chair. But if I can hand to Mr. Dupree.
Thank you very much, dear. Mr. Dupree.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, yes, the whole issue of legalistic, I understood the comment to say that that subclause 1 is a very long sentence to read and to precisely fathom what is intended as a hate crime, especially if you still have to go through the list as well. So the intention was, with the proposal to insert the list in clause 1, was to try and streamline sub 1, but then the concern is that it's still a very long sentence and it might be easier maybe just to break it up as it is proposed in the option itself. And if I may proceed to subclause 2, Mr. Chair, we've also presented...
Mr. Dupri, members, do you still need time to digest these options? These two options?
Okay. I think the first one, I still don't understand the difference between the first one, the 3 clause 1, and this one, but I think we still have to read it and understand it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Jale. Honorable Yako?
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think if you want to do justice to our decision as to which option that we choose, then we'd need more time to apply the mind.
Okay, no, that's fine. Thank you very much. Let's go to the next clause.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, Mr. Chair, subclause 1 introduces two facets. It creates a hate crime, but with reference to an underlying offence. For example, murder committed in hate then becomes a hate crime. But what we are concerned about, or what we were concerned about when we started working on the bill again, was we don't know, and we're actually concerned that subclause 2 will have the effect that a person will be convicted of a hate crime irrespective of what the underlying offence was. The result of that will be that that person's criminal record will only reflect that the person committed a hate crime, but it will not provide an explanation of what the underlying offence was. And this may become very important because if one looks then at the SAP 69, the criminal record, you see that the one person was convicted of a hate crime and received 6 months imprisonment. And the other person was also convicted of a hate crime, but that person went to jail for 20 years. So what we would like to propose with this option, Mr. Chair, is that in paragraph A, we say any person who commits an offence referred to in subsection 1 is guilty of the underlying offence as a hate crime and liable on conviction to the sentence as then contemplated in clause 6. But then, at this stage for us, the important thing is paragraph B then, to say that, or to require that the criminal record of a person who has been convicted of an offence referred to in paragraph A must explicitly record the underlying offence as a hate crime. That also becomes very important if we look at the requirements in later clauses where data on hate crimes must be collected. So that will assist then, of course, in the collection of that data. Should I pause or may I proceed, Chair?
I don't see any hands. Honorable Yako, is that an old hand or a new hand? Honorable Jala?
Thank you, Chair. I think Mr. Dupri was explaining, it really made sense a bit to me.
I think he has to assist us on that one, Chair, so that we, I like that one of collection of the data around the. Thank you, Chair. Okay.
Thank you very much. So for now, we are happy with the option, subject to further refinement as we come back to the PL. If we've got other new ideas, we'll, but for now, we agree with the option 2A and B. Can we proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The proposed amendment at sub-clause 3 is just to introduce then gender neutral term instead of referring to him or her. That was also pointed out to the committee previously, and I don't think it solicited much comments from the committee. With regard to the offence of hate speech, Mr. Chair, the proposed amendments there in subclause 1A is in the introductory words merely technical in nature. The proposed deletion of the word or the disjunctive or between subparagraphs A and B and 2 then is to fall in line with the Kwilani judgment and to replace the disjunctive with a conjunctive. And as we have explained earlier to the committee, this tightens up this provision largely to the extent that the both Roman 1 and 2 must be complied with before the offence of hate speech is then committed. I'll pause here, Mr. Chair, for any questions, or I'll go.
No questions, proceed.
Thank you, Chair. Mr. Chair, and then in paragraph B, there's no proposed amendments there. This is the whole issue of electronic communication, where I send an offending message on WhatsApp or one of those means of electronic communication. Then this is an important aspect, Mr. Chair. The department would like the committee to consider whether it is really necessary to have paragraph C in this subclause 1. We are of the view that paragraphs B and A, their ambit is wide enough then to cover C, but that is something that will also have, we'll also reconsider that and just make double sure that that is the correct way to go. But at this stage, we feel that paragraph C is covered under paragraphs A and B.
I also think so. But what are other members saying? No objection, that's more.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, Mr. Chair, with the subclause 2, the proposed amendments there, if I remember correctly, we have indicated them to the committee. They were included in the previous working document of the committee. However, we would like to propose an option here as well. Maybe to a certain extent to clarify the existing provision as introduced and to ensure that it is a provision which is tight enough to bring about a balance with regard to freedom of expression. Now, you will note here is only a few underlinings and strike-throughs because we have used the existing wording of sub 2 to to maybe clarify. So the first important thing is that all four subparagraphs, A to D, will have the requirement of bona fides. And then the trailing words then would be that does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the grounds. So one would be able to, or you would be free to engage in artistic creativity, but the important part is that as long as that artistic creativity does not advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on one or more of the grounds.
Honorable Chair, followed by Honorable Horn. I think Honorable Deputy Minister will be the last.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I think when I was reading this one, Chair, it reminded me of something, because it seems as if we are going to leave this one to the one who is creating that portrait or doing that creativity work without looking at the side of the offended, the victim. I'm not sure, Chair, if maybe I read it maybe in a way that other colleagues will read it differently. It reminded me of there was an issue at the gallery, Chair, where there was a statue of the president, the former president, President Zuma.
Mm.
The artist was saying, no, she did what? I don't know. I can't get into details because it is something that's, but it reminded me that the people, even the communities, there were people who were offended by that created work. And also, whilst the creator of that work was justifying it in another way. So I think this one reminded me of that. Can I be maybe given an assurance that it will cover people people who are who would be affected by this chair won't be offended. I don't know, but I still feel like there's something about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Horn.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Two issues I want to raise. The first is that noting that, of course, the definition of hate speech was then amended to fall in line with the Kwalani judgment. I want to hear from the department to what extent it has considered the fact that the Kwalani judgment, of course, ultimately dealt with hate speech only within the context of Papuda and therefore the civil remedies that is available and not within the criminal context. Now, one would think that as is the case always, there must be a higher bar for something to qualify as a crime than that would be expected when one deals with it as within the civil law. So I would want to hear whether the department is convinced that by just merely amending their definition of hate speech along the lines of what was found by the Constitutional Court in Kwalani, automatically then would satisfy the test around the criminalization of hate speech. Because I would think that that's not as simple as that. The second issue I want to raise, Chair, is in respect of the purported ground of exception for religious activities there in D as we see it now on the screen. And I would want to ask the question whether this cannot be rightfully seen by religious groups who, based on their teachings and their faith, would, for example, hold the view that certain actions, certain ways of life is against their teachings, and then based on the Bible or the Quran, would then determine that that specific act must be steered clear from by their followers, but secondly, that those who do not follow the teaching must be castigated, and if not, then let's say removed from society. So what I want to get to is the whole issue of then the definition of harm in this context, and that actually circles back to my initial comments around the possible higher test to in order to criminalize, and to hear whether this is not self-defeating in nature if one goes back to the fact that we talk about psychological, social, and cultural harm, whilst the religious teachings of many religions in itself then espouses to introduce cultural and or social harm in respect of those who do not live according to the basic doctrine or teachings of a religion. So basically what I'm asking here is, it's all well and fine to have D here in its current format, but will we not be as lawmakers actually trying to prescribe to the different religious groupings as to which components of their current beliefs and teachings would be acceptable and which not? And to my mind, it ultimately turns on the type of harm that we include in respect of these specific exceptions. Because physical harm is one thing, but I would think it would follow ordinarily or logically, naturally, that if there is a religion which says somebody who's right-handed must be converted to be left-handed, if they firm belief, and if you persist to be right-handed, then the religious group must exclude you from participating in the religious activity. So this is obviously now just in order not to cause offense, a type of religion that hopefully doesn't exist. But I hope I bring across my point. So I would think that in the circumstances, one would protect freedom of religion by then prohibiting me being subjected to physical harm in the event that I persist with using my right hand. The right of the religious grouping to say that I must be excluded even from the religious grouping and be subjected to some sort of a religious or what can be called a social harm in this specific circumstances, that ultimately should be justified, and that's the only way in which the balance, to my mind, could be struck between protecting freedom of religion versus society at large against hateful speech. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable John Jeffrey, Deputy Minister.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted to highlight again that the provisions of the option are meant to make it read easier. It's saying the same as what was in the original two. But just to highlight that there's the general offence of hate speech for which you, you have to say, communicate things, etc., that are that could be reasonably construed to demonstrate a clear intention to be harmful or to incite harm and promote or propagate hatred on any of the grounds that we discussed earlier. Grounds being the same as characteristics, except excluding occupational, trade, and political. So if you say something that shows an intention to be harmful or incite harm and promote or propagate hatred, then you've committed hate speech. The idea of two is sub two is because there's rights in society to freedom of artistic creativity, academic freedom, and the ability to conduct scientific inquiry. C is basically media freedom, and D is then religious freedom. That those are actually not bound by that lower level of having to be harmful or incite harm and promote or propagate hatred. This category under two have got a higher bar, so there's less restriction on them. And that is that they mustn't advocate hatred that constitutes incitement to cause harm based on the grounds. Now, and that is taken, as you know, from 16.2 of the Constitution. So you already they say that the right of freedom of expression doesn't cover advocacy of hatred based on race, ethnicity, gender, or religion. So they've got a specific category that constitutes incitement to cause harm. So just to highlight that point, when it comes to what this means, just to Honorable Jele and Mr. Dupria can disagree with me, but the painting, the spear, yes, a lot of people found it offensive, but it did not relate to, I'm not sure which of the grounds that it was about the former president directly. I'm not sure whether there were issues relating to those grounds that it affected. It wasn't portraying him as part of a particular group. So that would be my view, that it wouldn't be covered, because that this is about the group you belong to, not about that you're perceived to belong to, not the individual, the individual who you are. On Mr. Horn's point, and I think it's raised within the context of the definition of harm, but the intention was, your right-wing people being excluded, well, you can be excluded. It's a question of, is that harm that you've been excluded? Does that affect your dignity? The issue basically was, and again, it's what does the Constitution mean when it refers to the limitation on freedom of speech or freedom of expression? I would have thought the issue is that it's fine to say that right-handed people are not good people, are bad people, maybe they're going to hell. But as long as you don't go as far, and to exclude them, but as long as you don't go as far as saying they must be beaten up so that they will learn the error of their ways, they must be killed because they're so bad. That I would have seen that as what we're trying to do in terms of the borderline. I mean the line that you've got across. Lastly, just on the issue of Tapuda and Kwelane is about civil issues, and this is criminalizing. Just remember that Tapuda under Section 10 constitutes, or Section 10 constitutes a prohibition of hate speech. So it says you can't say these things, these particular kind of things, although it then doesn't provide specifically under 10.1 criminal sanction. But then it moves on under 10.2 to saying without prejudice to any of the civil remedies, the court may refer the matter to the Director of Public Prosecutions. So it does also envisage a criminal component. And I think the last point is, we have crimen injuria in our law as common law. Is crimen injuria currently constitutional? There haven't been any cases as yet, but this is trying to set up the limitations of free speech, what you can say, what you can't say, with a category of four groups that are given more more freedom than ordinary people. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister. Any further comments? Thank you very much.
I don't know if Priya wants to respond.
No, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm covered. Thank you.
Okay, can we proceed?
Just a small thing that the Deputy Minister said. He says this refer to a group, not an individual. I don't understand that. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm lost somewhere in the explanation. Because if we are talking, we are referring to 4.1, Chapter 10A. It says any person who is intentionally publishes, propagates, advocates, or communicates anything to one or more persons in a manner, and then gives that list and all that, and go down, unless maybe I'm lost somewhere. The provision of subsection 1 do not apply in respect of anything done as contemplated in subsection 1. Maybe there's something that I don't understand the effect. I'm lost a bit. Can you assist me there? Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable DM or Mr.
Now, if I can come back. I mean, look, hate speech is around not personally insulting somebody. So I can say things, or let's say you can say things, Chair or Honorable Maseko Jele, about me. The type of person I am, the types of habits I've got, those kinds of things, but it's about me. And that's not hate speech. You might be being very nasty, you might be hurting me a lot, but that's not hate speech. The issue of hate speech, the things you say about me must be based on those grounds that we listed. And that would be not so much me, but the group I belong to. So it could be age. It could be that I'm an albino. It could be my ethnic or social origin, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not specific to me. It's about the group that I'm seen to be linked with. So if you insult me personally, it's not hate speech in terms of this act. This is not an anti-insult act. It's around insulting me on the basis of the group or groups I'm perceived to belong to. I don't know if that helps, Chair. Maybe Mr. Dupria can also assist, or Ms. Huerta.
Mr. Dupria?
Mr. Chair, I don't know whether I can really add anything to what the Deputy Minister just said. Maybe just to respond to the whole issue of, and this is high-level response, I don't want to go into too much detail, but if you look at the difference between the civil law and the criminal law, we in sub one, we have the elements of the crime, but the important keywords, if one could indicate that, is the whole issue of you intentionally publishing something with a clear intention to be harmful, incite harm, and promote or propagate hatred. And that is the test that will be applied for criminality, but the intentionally is the important part thereof. And those are the existing rules of intention will apply, and the existing requirements of proving that intention beyond is it a reasonable doubt? I lost myself now. But yes, the criminal test will apply because you have the elements of your crime here.
Thank you very much. I think Honorable Chair, you're clarified now.
Yes, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Can we proceed?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then in sub-clause 3, once again, the technical amendment that was already brought to the attention of the committee in a previous working document. Clause 5 deals with victim impact statement. In sub-clause 1, those are merely technical amendments or sub-clause 2, the proposal here is, and it's also in line with comments that the committee received in the proposed new paragraph A, is then actually the existing or the introduced version of sub-clause 2, and then it is proposed that there must be a requirement introduced that where it is not possible for the prosecutor to obtain a victim impact statement, that prosecutor must then provide the court with reasons for the absence of such statement. Subclause 3.
Chair, can I quickly come in? Oh, sorry, after subclause 3, sorry.
Yes, there's no proposed amendments there. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, if I can just come in, because this is sort of a quite an important issue. I mean, currently victim impact statements can be led. This is now after the person is found guilty, and it would be an aggravation of sentence usually. What this does is say in hate crimes, they must be led. They can be led by the victim if they're still around, or the victim's family, or persons with whom the victim associates or supports. So if the victim is deceased because of their sexual orientation, it would be possible for somebody from an organization representing, let's say, lesbians to give a victim impact assessment of the impact on this crime. But the issue here is that in a hate crime, a victim impact statement must be led. If it's not possible, as is under 2B, to obtain the statement, then the prosecutor must give reasons to the court. They can't just leave it and pretend that they missed it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Let's proceed.
Hank, you might be muted. We can't hear a thing.
My apologies. Sorry, Mr. Chair. When we get to clause 6, the penalties and orders provision, The First Amendment is just a correction of incorrect spelling in the introduced version of the bill. And if I remember correctly, there's no substantive proposed amendments here, possibly just to provide the option, and that is to address the concerns that were raised with regard to the sentences to be imposed on persons who are convicted of hate speech. The proposed amendment now, Mr. Chair, is a repetition of paragraph B, but then rather to leave out the first conviction of, or the imprisonment for the first conviction, or a fine of 3 years. So the proposal here is now to make a hate speech, whether it's a first or a second offence, subject to the discretion of the court, of course, for a period of not exceeding 5 years, or both the fine and such imprisonment. The
comments on this one? None.
Yes. Yes, Chair. I think here, I think I will have a very different view. It's unfortunate because when we were, if we were dealing with this issue for the first time, I was not there, Chair. But I don't think that I'm happy with the fine and the 3 years. This matter is serious, Chair. It's very serious. So this issue of giving people a fine, correctional supervision, and a 3 years, not more than 3 years, I don't think it's. When we were getting briefing by the minister, the deputy minister on this issue, there was a point where he indicated, Chair, I don't know how the department came about with 3 years, because initially they gave us 5 years themselves somewhere. They were not talking 3 years. And the minister, also the deputy minister, also indicated to us that in some other places, even though that research does not reflect now on the research that we received, but he gave us a fairly a briefing on this issue of, he indicated that in some other places they are talking 7 years. I don't know where was he getting that, but I was happy about those 7 years, 8 years going upwards. But if we're going to say 3 years, then it's as good as we just leave this thing, because this is serious, like I indicated, Chair. I propose for tougher action, even this one, the same way as we did with the issue of drugs and whatever. This is important. It's really affecting the nation, the rainbow nation that we want to build. People are taking advantage of people, history. I indicated earlier the issue of skin color and all those things. Those things, Chair, to the people that I. Things that these things are being directed to, they are very, very, they go deeper, Chair, psychologically. And people, we want to set a statement, not in a manner of anger or a manner of reversing apartheid or what, no, Chair, but people who want to take us back to what was happening in our history, we don't think that they belong in this nation. It has to be tough. The punishment has to be tough. I'm talking about first time offender, it should be 5 years imprisonment. And the second one, we might go even to 10 years. And that will stop. We'll respect each other. We'll live in our community. We won't find even these things that are happening in our institutions, where somebody will just move from his dormitory and go and urinate in somebody's property and all that. And that's the only example that I'm giving.
But there are extreme things when it comes to this, Chair. So we have to make sure that we tighten the punishment. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Yakwa.
Hi, Chair. I'm sorry about that. My fingers are not working today. I think I will agree with Honorable Maseko Jela on this one, specifically the part of deliberate hate crimes that are done against people maliciously because you have power over them. So I think I will agree with her on that one.
Thank you very much. In the absence of any other views, Mr. Dupree, can you amend the convictions accordingly?
Mr. Chair, we'll look at that for you. I'm just concerned about the last observation that was made. And we must always be careful when we look at the penalties clause. The first portion of the subclauses 1 and 2 deal with hate crimes. So that is not the ambit of 3. 3 deals with hate speech. But Mr. Chair, yes, we hear the committee's request and we'll amend the working document for the committee accordingly.
Okay. Honorable Horn?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Now, I was just about to say, if it is about hate speech, the argument does not find favor with us. We will, from our side, and we will obviously contemplate it somewhat further, in respect of hate crimes, we would be in support of harsh sanctions in as far as it goes to a limited number of categories or characteristics, but we will still mull over the broad list of characteristics if they ultimately end up all being in the legislation. Mm. And once again, without repeating what I've said earlier, to our mind, there must be a justification to include characteristics and then link it to very harsh sanctions. And that justification, to our mind, is to be found in a already established pattern of behavior that is to be addressed through criminalization and the imposition of harsh sanctions. That is what it would be, I think, the responsible thing to do as lawmakers. This cannot be an emotional reaction. So from our side, we're not closing the door on supporting the harsher sanctions in respect of a limited number of those characteristics, and specifically those identified during constitution making, when we decided as a country that we want to make a definitive break with the ills of our past. But in the absence of a clear indication that all of these other characteristics is really already at the heart of unacceptable activity in a general and often occurring manner, I don't think we will be in a position to necessarily support this type of treatment of offenders. Thank you.
Do you also agree, Honorable Horn, that you would also provide an option, even on the characteristics, so that we can engage with it?
Yeah, no, thank you, Chair. I obviously, we accept your guidance that we as a committee must work constructively in that regard. Once again, it would have been helpful if the department was able to come to us and say, we've included this one, not merely because somebody within our ranks or at some or other consultation forum said, oh, it would be good to include this as well. This could someday lead to unacceptable discriminatory behavior against this group of people. I mean, ultimately, and I don't want to use fighting words, I would have think that would have enabled Parliament and this committee to go about this in a proper way. it is really placing us in a precarious position where it's now our duty to, without any proper substantiation, decide on which characteristics must be included or not. Even if we, and we will embrace your guidance in this regard, but even if we as a committee ultimately go about this, I can just think to myself one day when this is placed in front of a court for adjudication, how the court will think about it if we just, even if we do spend a lot of time debating this and ultimately settling on a list, if there's no, proper factual basis for us to include characteristics. So I take your guidance. We will make constructive work of it. But in the same vein, from our side, we must say that it's very problematic. Thank you, yes. Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Breitenbach.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I agree with the comments of the Honorable Horn, and of course we will fully participate in the process, but there are some reservations. We must also bear in mind with regards to setting out sentences in legislation that the courts retain their discretion. And we cannot fetter that discretion even with legislation, so there must be room for a court to exercise its discretion, regardless of what our recommendations are, or regardless of what we put into the legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Deputy Minister.
Sorry, I just had a problem with unmuting. Just, because Mr. Horn's raised it again, the list of characteristics come from the Constitution, they come from Papuda, they are basically characteristics generally accepted as being discriminatory. So even the issue of age, Mr. Horn, is in Papuda, which was the one that I had raised concerns with. The new ones that people have put in are issues actually, I think, from Papuda. It's a question of whether marital status and pregnancy are a basis for a hate crime or for hate speech. There might be a basis for discrimination, definitely, but are they a basis for a hate crime or hate speech? So I honestly don't understand what Mr. Horn's problem is. The committee needs to apply its mind to these characteristics and decide whether any should be taken out, whether there are any additional ones should be put in. Then lastly, on Advocate Breitenbach's point, I mean, these are, of course, maximum sentences, which is standard for any legislation. And she knows that, that basically if a crime is created, then you put down the penalty. That's basically the person can be sentenced to a fine and a term of imprisonment or a term of imprisonment of up to 10 years or 5 years or 3 years. But it's up to the court what they're going to sentence you. It's not a minimum sentence where they've got to be substantial and compelling reasons not to or to deviate from that. This is just the maximum. Obviously, the court has the discretion as to what they're going to sentence the person. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Horn, is it an old hand or a new hand?
No, it's a new hand, and Chair, and I look, as I say, we're obviously about to conclude. I don't think it's helpful of the minister to say he honestly can't understand my issue. If the minister can't understand that we must go about criminalizing something that has up to now been regulated by way of Papuda and the equality courts, and I mean, he's now previously referred to the fact that there's a very informal reference to offences and crimen injuria, which is of course part of our common law, that doesn't take away from the absolute responsibility of Parliament and this committee to carefully consider the basis on which we will criminalize something that has up to now been regulated by way of equality legislation, which is much a less invasive part of what we see as a previous decision by way of both lawmakers and constitution makers to try and establish a culture of constitutionalism and a culture of human rights. For us to now as a country say, now the point has arrived in our new dispensation where these things must be criminalized. We must have a clear, factual, scientific and a rational legal basis to embark upon this. So if the minister says he can honestly not see why I argue that we must go about this carefully, then I honestly can't understand how we cannot see that to criminalize something that up to now has been dealt with by way of a less invasive regime, that we must go about that carefully. I honestly can't see how he cannot see that. Thank you.
Members, I think what we, before I note Honorable Jelle and Honorable Deputy Minister, I think let's go back to our decision. Firstly, a bill is a proposal from the executive to parliament. And once the bill is in parliament, it's a parliament space. So this bill is now before us. Now the issue is that we have to apply our mind to each and every clause of the bill before we pass it. The Deputy Minister has raised an issue that some of the characteristics arise from the Constitution, and then some were added as part of the public consultation with some stakeholders. I think Honorable Mr. Dupree, it will be good if you can identify those that are derived straight from the Constitution, PEPUDA, and then those that have been suggested. Was I think this issue of characteristics is going to be the most contentious issue, I think, in this bill. So I think those that are arising from the Constitution, I don't think that there would be a need for further elaboration and clarification, because the issue, the authority is the Constitution, maybe a PEPUDA. And then those that have been suggested, well, we can have further discussions on each and every suggestion on the characteristics that has been suggested. That is one area. And then that does not preclude other political parties to come with various options which we would engage on. And then ultimately we might arrive at a consensus or we might agree to disagree. That is what I think we need to do. Let's focus on what is at stake. Let us not allow ourselves to be just easily diverted. I do think that we are still going to come back and work on this issue of characteristics. There has been explanation that has been given by the Deputy Minister on some of them, especially those that are arising out of the Constitution and other instruments like PEPUDA. But we will come back and have a discussion on these characteristics. And we are not only saying, maybe I put it in a wrong way, that is only Honorable Horn who must provide options. I think anyone who has got other additions or subtractions is free to do that, to provide options. I would think that even Honorable Schwartz would have some options to give. Already there has been a suggestion by Honorable Jelle on the issue of color, to include skin color. So this is work in progress. We have not arrived at a situation where everything is cut in stone. So let's try and work towards that. There is going to come a time where we will be debating the various options. But let's take it one step at a time. Honorable Jale, I hope we are moving towards a resolution.
Yes, you have covered me. The only thing that you have left is the issue of, yes, we agree also that the court, when the matter is in front of the court will also use their discretion in terms of the facts that will be presented to them. But for now, we are concentrating on us as the lawmakers. How do we want to shape this? Thank you, Chair. You have covered me.
Thank you very much, Honorable Deputy Minister.
Chair, thanks. No, I think you've largely covered me, but just to say that the issue was, where did the list come from? And as I've said, Constitution, PUDA, Constitution 9.3, 16.2. PUDA, people can look at PUDA. The points that were not originally included but are in the Constitution is conscience. That's in blue. It was in PUDA has HIV status, and I think, or AIDS was included as a submission. Marital status and pregnancy are, I think they are 16, they are 9, no, those are in the Constitution. It's a question of should they be here, but really I would appeal to, I can assure Mr. Horn, I would appeal to the committee to please consider each of the grounds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think we are all in agreement now that this is a work in progress. We will still come back to it. Can we move to the next one?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In clause 7, the proposal there is that an obligation should be placed on the National Commissioner to issue national instructions to the members of the South African Police Service who are tasked with investigating the crimes created in the bill. And that is subparagraph A, and there are certain specific requirements that must be complied with in those national instructions. Those are in Roman 1 and Roman 2. And then there's also a proposal that the National Commissioner should also be required to introduce training with regard to the investigation of these alleged crimes, and that those investigations must be done in an appropriate, efficient and sensitive manner. Then the proposed paragraph 2A, those were the provisions that were included in the introduced version of the bill. So those are merely consequential amendments, because the proposal is to introduce subparagraph B, which will place an obligation on the National Director of Public Prosecutors, prosecutions, to also develop training courses to also sensitize prosecutors with regard to prosecuting these type of offenses. On the reporting on the implementation of the Act, there's just the technical amendment in paragraph 2D. The words "of the" was left out in the introduced version of the bill. And then the proposal is also that in paragraph 9, which deals with the prevention of hate crimes and hate speech and the relevant responsibilities being introduced in respect of certain institutions, that reference should also be made to the Commission for the Promotion and Protection of the Rights of Cultural, etc. communities. Then with regard to the proposed amendments, with regard to the, or in respect of the responsibilities of the National Commissioner of SAPS and in the National Director of Public Prosecutions, the proposal is that there's not much need for sub 2B then. So the proposal is to omit that provision from the bill. Then with regard to regulations, if I remember correctly, this was also included in a previous version of the working doc. Sorry, Mr. Chair, I see there are hands.
Honorable Nivor Straha. Firstly, Honorable Chair, is that your hand or your old hand? Honorable Nivor Straha.
Thank you very much, Chair. If Mr. Dupria could go back to the part about the training courses. I think it's a bit, there was something that was deleted. It's a bit further down. I'm just looking on my notes, Chair. The public officials, that is double-striked. Why is that paragraph double-striked? Are public officials covered? Is it not just judicial officers, you know, trained at the Justice College? Is there somewhere that public officials are covered in terms of training? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. Dupré?
Mr. Chair, mainly the proposal the proposal to delete 2B is because of the fact that there are now specific requirements in respect or obligations in respect of the National Commissioner of SAT and the National Director of Public Prosecutions to develop those training courses. So that is why the proposal is that the paragraph B should then be deleted. There is, thank you, Chair.
It's clear, thank you, Chair.
Then Mr. Chair, thank you, Chair. The regulations provision, the proposed amendments there was included in a previous working document of the committee. So we have taken the committee through that. Then laws amended are straightforward. The proposed amendment in subclause 12 is to correct the year, reference to the year of the bill or the act. Then we get to the schedule. Most of those proposed amendments, I'm going to highlight two for you, Mr. Chair, but just to give you a general indication, the amendments proposed here are of a technical nature, just to correct reference to 2018 to 2022. I would like to highlight the proposed amendment, and this is an amendment to Section 18 of the Criminal Procedure Act, which deals with the prescription of the right to institute prosecutions. And the introduced version of the bill still refer to right or compelled right as contemplated in Sections 3 and 4 of the Sexual Offences Act. However, the proposed amendment now is that reference should be made to any sexual offence in terms of the common law or statute. Now, this is words that are actually already in Section 18, because Section 18 was amended as a result of the Liebenstein matter. So first of all, the proposed amendment there, although it is underlined, it will not be underlined in the final version or the B version of the bill. But that is to align the wording with Section 18. And then the important part, of course, then is this part that is to be included or inserted in Section 18 as soon as this act commences. So that was the important one. The next one I would like to highlight, and I'm most probably, with your permission, Mr. Chair, I'm going to conclude with this one. And it's something that I discovered yesterday, but I think it's something that the committee can consider amending. And the proposal here would be, maybe let me take one step backwards. And I checked the original version of the Criminal Procedure Act as it was published in the Government Gazette, and it does have an index. Now, this is a very technical aspect, but I feel obliged to point it out to the committee. So when it comes to Chapter 26 of the Criminal Procedure Act, the index refers to, if I remember correctly, sections 159 to 270. Now the proposal here is to include a 270A, capital A. So that would mean that we will have to go back and amend the index, but I don't think it will be necessary or it can be avoided to the extent that the proposed insertion of 270 capital A can be replaced with reference to 269 capital B, and then it will not be necessary to amend the index to the Criminal Procedure Act. And secondly, Section 270 is what I would like to call a catch-all provision, or maybe a catch-the-rest provision. And with your permission, I'm just quickly going to read it to you because I think then it will...
No, Mr. Dupre, I think it's fine for now because I'm looking at the time. We are still going to come to these ones. I think it's fine for now because we still have to have a few minutes to discuss some committee business. I think let's end it at one. So when we come back after we then we'll deal with the with two.
We'll do, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to proceed now or after one? Sorry, I missed that part.
No, we are ending for today.
Oh, I understand.
Yes, because members have to catch buses to City Hall.
Thank you, Chief.
Thank you very much for the good work. We will communicate, I think the committee secretariat will communicate with you the next time we're going to meet, but I think we will have had sense of the discussions. So in redrafting some of the issue areas, you would take into consideration the issues we have raised.
Will do. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister, also on the side for being with us. Thank you very much. I think, but don't leave us yet. There is a matter here that we would need your assistance. There is a recap bill which is left with 12 months. The court deadline, I think, gave Parliament 36 months. Now we're left with 12 months. It will be important if that bill is expedited because the implications for interception will be too big. We are not sure as to how far is that bill within the cabinet process. It would be important that if that bill is, we are able to deal with that bill early next year. And if possible, we can even start now inviting public comments. And then the next one, Committee Secretary, there is also another one that the three ministers have signed in terms of breakup that we need to submit to Parliament for approval. What is it?
Uh, Chairperson?
Yes.
I'm not so sure if you are talking about, let me just get the name of the thing quickly. I don't know if you're talking about the list of equipment.
Yes.
Yes.
It needs to go to the house. So members, I'm just asking.
Chair?
Hello?
Good afternoon, Chair. Sorry, I couldn't find my hand today, is it? But if I may come in, it's a request for exemption in terms of Section 43 to possess listed equipment in terms of the RICA.
Yes, thank you very much. So members, I am asking for permission to ensure that we slot this thing in our program and so that it can go to the house as soon as possible.
Permission granted, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Janji, for tomorrow, how are we?
I'm not sure if Honorable Janji is in, Chair, but tomorrow and Friday will be committed on the other part of the fence.
Oh, okay. So tomorrow we will proceed with the subcommittee, honorable members, the subcommittee issues. I think the information has been circulated.
Chairperson?
Yes.
Tomorrow is Thursday.
Oh, tomorrow, no, Friday. It has been a long year. Friday.
It has been.
Friday, we'll proceed with the subcommittee, and then tomorrow there's no sitting, so we'll meet on Friday. Thank you very much. Deputy Minister, is the Deputy Minister still around?
I'm still here, Chair. The points yes. on the RICA amendment are noted. That was today that was speaking on the notice, but we'll follow up on that issue. But thanks. Yes. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yes, no, thank you very much. So we will invite the Minister to lead us on that interception, that exemption certificate, so that the committee can make a recommendation to the House.
Thanks, Chair. We'll probably have to get, I think it's the police that want it, so, but we'll arrange with them to come along too.
Okay. No, thank you very much. No, thank you very much, Jim, and thank you very much to everybody on the virtual platform and those who are watching at home. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.